On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, Alex Bregman is headed to the Chicago Cubs, which means Boston Red Sox. What is going on? What is going on in Boston? We talk about both of those two teams and the fallout from the Bregman signing. We talk about Bo Bichette meeting with the Philadelphia Phillies, and we celebrate Team USA adding Ernie Clement. Oh my goodness, Ernie Clement in the WBC. We love to see it. All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that thinks the Chicago Cubs should acquire Brendan Rodgers. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. That would then give the Chicago Cubs the top three picks in the 2015 MLB draft as they have signed one Mr. Alex Bregman to a five-year, $175 million deferred deal. That is going to be the bulk of our podcast today. I am back from vacation. Jordan, here as always. Jordan, hello, my friend. Hello.
It is good to see you. Welcome back, Jake. Thanks again to the four gentlemen who filled in for you last week. Chandler Rome, Jack Harris, Eric Longenhagen, and of course, Lance Brozdowski. I had a great time with them, but of course, I've been looking forward to podcasting with you this is what we do. So I'm always looking forward to podcasting with you, but especially when we get news like this. Let's get to it. It's our opener.
It is early January. It's cold in Chicago. I don't know if there's snow on the ground or not. I just kind of assume there is. And yet, the ivy at Wrigley is a shining shade of green as the Chicago Cubs spent some frickin' money, baby, signing Alex Bregman, 5 years, $175 million. I didn't think they would do it, and they did it. There are so many repercussions from this deal. We learn a lot from it, but for me, the first thing that came to my mind was Cubs ownership made the commitment that we and the entire fan base was incredibly doubtful and skeptical that they would make.
You know, people will say, oh, well, hold on a second. You know, oh, 175, it's not actually that much because $70 million is deferred. It's only $30 million a year. Well, guess what? That's the name of the game. You find a way to get the deal done by putting in whatever deferrals and contract stipulations, which in this case apparently also includes a no trade clause. Of course, we'll talk about the team that was not willing to give Alex Bregman what he wanted in the second block of this show. But we stay focused on the Cubs here and this desire to spend. Not just this desire to spend in relation to their recent history, which of course has not been a lot in the way of free agency, Dansby Swanson being their most recent, giant free agent acquisition 3 years ago, Jason Hayward before that, this Bregman contract marking the third largest free agent contract in franchise history, but also just as it relates to Alex Bregman himself. Let's remember, a year ago, the Cubs were involved as Alex Bregman lingered on the free agent market, but their best offer last year was 4 and 115. Which ultimately, if it was going to be a shorter-term contract, the Red Sox clearly gave Bregman what he was looking for at the time, which was the opportunity to retest the market. And that 4-1-15 was also not anywhere close to the largest offer he reportedly got last year, which was from Detroit, which was, I believe, 6-1-71. So we'll get to the Scott Boris element for how well Alex Bregman did here in a second. But let's just focus on the Cubs making it happen. And that's really what I wrote about late on Saturday night, as the Bears celebrated their raucous comeback and Chicago was alive. And I was up at 1 a.m. on Saturday night writing about Alex Bregman, is that the Cubs, they learned, okay, like in all the ways that clearly the Red Sox somehow didn't, everything that they thought that they wanted in Alex Bregman, I think that they were re-energized, re-motivated to attempt. And as we start talking about the roster fit, with Matt Shaw being there, Nico Hoerner still being there, clearly Matt Shaw did not show them enough this season to preclude them from attempting that offer. You have to assume that a year ago, there was still enough confidence that he could maybe be an impact player that it was like, you know what, that's restricting us from going all in on Bregman. Yes, we want him, but we're not really all the way there mentally to be at the top of this bidding war. Now they understand we've just got back to the postseason. We have a good team, but we are still a bat short if we're letting Kyle Tucker go. And Alex Bregman, we're going to talk about all the reasons why a team would want him. He makes this baseball team a whole lot better.
That's the whole thing. We've said this before, we'll say it again. When you evaluate a free agent contract, the money, the number, is only important in what it restricts or allows a team for doing in the future, right? Because when you see 5175, like on a value per dollar basis, is Alex Bregman, the player moving forward, worth, whatever that means, 175 over 5 years? I would say no. Like, I have concerns about his lower body. Is he going to stay healthy? What kind of defender is he going to be at third? How's his bat going to play in that park, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of his damage in the air is to the pull side. It's hard to get the ball in the air to the pull side of certain parts of Fenway down the line, right? Don't care about all that.
Not Fenway. Not Fenway anymore.
Oops. That's a Breslauian slip. All of that is like a future problem, because right now, the 2026 to 2028 Cubs are better than they would have been had they not signed Alex Bregman. The Red Sox are worse than they were. That's it. We can evaluate all the ins and the outs and the money and what they did do and what they didn't do. That's the upshot. The Cubs are better than they were going to be, and the Red Sox are worse than they could have been.
And that is also, you mentioned, right, the money is within the confines, in often cases, you know, self-imposed confines of whatever ownership is willing to do. The Cubs have not really been willing to push up against the luxury tax, let alone go far surpassed it recently. Yes, they have a top 10 payroll, but there's a very big difference between a top 10 payroll and a top 5 payroll. And while this contract, I don't believe, puts them in top 5 category, it gets them a lot closer to that first luxury tax line. But I do think that that last point you made is the thing that I just repeat every time we do free agency. I've said this for years on this show and everywhere, which is, yes, you see the final numbers and you say, oh boy, oh, that's not going to look so good at the end. Oh man, that's a lot of money to pay third. It's like, yes, that's the cost of doing business. The reason that's how you get him on your team now. As you just said about Pete Alonso, oh, I'm not sure you want to pay Pete Alonso that when he's 35. Well, you know what you get for overpaying him? He's on your team now. And that's why you're signing free agents now, because you want to win now. And because the Cubs clearly have identified correctly that this is an opportunity to make them a relevant National League contender, powerhouse, favorite, whatever you want to call them, that the Cubs should be and have really not been since they won the World Series. This is an opportunity to do that. Let's talk about Alex Bregman, the player, because clearly there's more than that that's relevant. But I do think,
let me just say this,
regardless of the contract of like, oh, how's it going to age? I do think the season that he just had is very interesting in a lot of respects, and like, what, how much of an impact are we talking about him? But you go ahead.
Do you want to be in the Alex Bregman business? Like, are you in? I'm asking you, Jordan. Like, are you?
Yeah. Yes.
In,
yes.
On Alex Bregman, the player.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. I am. I think that the season that he had, because what you start seeing is, yes, the initial shock. Okay. Oh my God, the Cubs got him. The Red Sox lost him. And then you're like, all right, well, what did he just do? Right. Because there's so much
around it that goes beyond the stats. I want to go back to the beginning. I think we kind of want to rewind a little bit here. Because, I opened the show by saying Bregman, 2015, number two pick, right? Like, he wears number two because he went second. He's the core of these Houston Astros teams. Dansby Swanson, that's the joke. Ian Happ went ninth. Kyle Tucker went fifth. They should go get Dylan Tate and Tyler J.
Dylan Tate and Brendan Rodgers are both available. They could round out the top 10.
But Alex Bregman is like an MVP candidate type player in 18 and 19, right? Like, he's putting up 8-win, 9-win seasons. He's not that guy anymore. We all know that. His body's kind of taken a step back. He's not hitting for that level of power. But since, you know,
the ball 2021, is not juiced.
The ball is not juiced. All of that is combined. He is over the last five seasons, a 123 OPS plus hitter, right? 23% better than the league average. That means he has been worth 20 wins over that span, like a four-win player. He's a very good player. He's not getting top MVP votes. He's made one All-Star game in that span. He's a good defender with some lower body injury issues. And he walks a lot and he never strikes out, right? Like, that's the Alex Bregman thing. He is also
on the field.
On the field. He is also, and this is relevant, one of the very few players, one of the very, very, very few players in the sport, really in any sport, in my opinion, that is a needle moving presence in the clubhouse. That is a fact. We said this about Kyle Schwarber. That is true. We're going to say this about Alex Bregman. It is also true. The number of players for whom that is true, in my opinion, is less than 15. Like, it is, there are, it's a sliding scale, obviously, right? Like, guys are, it's not like you're good or you're bad, but like, Alex Bregman is generally considered as impactful of a leadership presence as there is in the sport. That has been said by the Red Sox all year, and all their team, all the teammates on the Red Sox. Anybody who's ever been around Alex Bregman inside a room says that that matters. And I think it does matter in this context for the Cubs. I think that is like built into this number, because if you just do beep bop boop bop on the BREF page and the spreadsheet, this is not the number it would necessarily spit out. I think that is similar to what we talked about with Kyle Schwarber. Like, okay, Jordan, if you're the Cubs and you could pay Alex Bregman a salary over the next 4 years, 5 years, to be around Pete Crow Armstrong every day, he doesn't play a single game. Okay? He doesn't play a game. He's just like around Pete Crow Armstrong every day. You're paying Bregman, what, a mil? Two?
Like, I mean, this is literally the premise of intangible, unquantifiable. You're asking me to put a number on something that cannot be measured. But I agree with all your points. And I think that Schwarber is also an interesting part of this, because I know you had speculated early on in the offseason that maybe the Cubs would be interested in a reunion with him. And I'm not sure the degree to which they actively explored that or whether Schwarber was interested in that whatsoever. But you can't imagine whether they did or they didn't, that if this was the kind of player that they felt like they needed. Yeah. And it is an interesting point when you look at the Cubs roster. This is another thing we start talking about, the fit. I want to go back to Bregman on the field in a second, but while we're on this point, we'll just kind of hammer this home more. We mentioned Dansby Swanson. There are some veterans on this team, for sure, that have been there for a long time, that understand. Ian Happ, right? Longest tenured Cub, right? On the pitching staff, there's some guys that have been around, that have won, that have seen some stuff. Swanson is, in many respects, partially because he was drafted the same year, 3 years starring in the SEC, has this, you know, renowned for impact on and off the field. It's a little bit of a different flavor, right? It shouldn't be discounted, but it's also someone, if you're saying like, he's won everywhere, he's got a World Series, I would guess that a lot of the same rough things were being, I know this because we were covering it, when they signed Dansby Swanson. Okay?
Yeah, now, I think that there's a lot of different things involved. It manifests differently, I think. I agree.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to make that distinction.
Sure.
Because I think some people would assume, well, isn't Dansby Swanson already that? I think that you can see how maybe the Cubs thought there is still another level. There's still something to be added. Of course, more importantly, is that Alex Bregman was really good at baseball. And they clearly did not think that that they identified third base could be a place to upgrade. If we're just talking about war, 3-4 wins, that's a big deal. The season that Bregman just had, though, is also interesting because he was so incredible for the first 2 months. He has this quad injury. He comes back, by all accounts, probably faster than he needed to. And the numbers down the stretch were straight up bad. I mean, they essentially made his numbers look a lot more average than they were at the time of the injury.
It was a season that in three parts, right? It was 2 months of being incredible, 2 months on the IL, and then 2 months of being bad.
Yeah. And so now that said, right, you're still wondering, okay, what kind of player are you going to be getting? I think what the reason you feel good about Bregman, I remember we had these conversations last year before he signed, which is the plate skills, the never striking out, the walk, like this is about as advanced of an approach as you're going to have, just the walk to strike out, the ball in play. No, he is not hitting the ball nearly as hard as the average, you know, superstar hitter. But he makes it work. And yes, it'll be interesting how that plays in Chicago, but I still think it's the kind of approach that's going to be an above average line. And if he's still playing plus defense at third, you know, that's a really, really, really good player. So
he's also
it makes them better, but I think clearly player, they identified him as bringing more.
He's going to do everything possible within his power to get the most out of his abilities at every single turn, right? Like This is not a guy who's just going to take the big bag of money and rest on his laurels, I guess is what I'm saying. You know,
and as we know, a guy he's played more postseason games than every player ever, except for like he's about third or fourth already all time.
Like him and Jeets, played. Right?
He's made the postseason every year. So that's not an accident. Yes, he was on some very good Astros teams, but we'll get to the Red Sox element. He basically was exactly what they were looking for. They returned to the postseason. He was a huge part of that. Even when he was injured, by all accounts, he was making an impact on the Red Sox winning because of what he brings, not just from the leadership, from the baseball IQ standpoint, the game planning, the player development, all of that stuff is something that he can bring to that team.
A guy that came to mind in a weird way for me, as I've like kind of thought about Bregman in 4 years, is Andrew McCutchen, where like the current version of Andrew McCutchen, the last couple seasons, like, he is not what he once was, right? But his plate skills are just so good that even though he's got, like, very relatively little physical ability left in the tank, he's still a league average hitter, right? Bregman is even better at those things than McCutchen is, right? And so, like, the worst version of Bregman, in my mind, as he gets older, like, the floor there is really high. The ceiling with Alex Bregman is also like not that high, in my opinion. Like, he's never going to be that guy that he was anymore. And fortunately, the Cubs don't necessarily need him to be a 9-win player. They don't even need him to be a 5-win player, right? And I think
let's talk about that. Let's talk about now just like looking at the Cubs. They also, you know, traded for Edward Cabrera while you were gone. Yeah. That was the first big move. And I think coming into the offseason, even as we started to accept, all right, they don't seem to be very interested in Kyle Tucker, we were like, well, they could play Seiya Suzuki in the outfield, and then they have Owen Casey. Okay, so now you've traded Owen Casey for Edward Cabrera. So you're ready-made Tucker replacement, even if that's not he's getting every start in right field this year. He was clearly a big part of that plan for 2026. Then you start to have questions about the offense, and we talked about that with Lance. Like Lance said himself, who covers the Cubs on a regular basis, he was like, this offense still does seem to be a bat short. As you look at this roster now, you know, a lot of discourse about what's their next move. Would they trade Nico Horner with 1 year of his contract remaining? Would they trade Matt Shaw and ride it out with Nico, try to extend Nico? Who knows? When you look at this lineup, and also particularly the idea that Seiya Suzuki would be playing the outfield more than not, which a year ago they were not interested in doing. And as Lance pointed out, that worked. He was DHing every day and Seiya Suzuki was awesome. When you look at this group, I mean, I know you probably haven't thought about the Brewers for literally 1 second since the season ended. But as you think about them in the NL Central, you think about them in the National League, does this look like a team that is done? Does this look like a team that still has one more move? Because I'm skeptical that they have another big financial addition just because they're right up against luxury tax and like they've tucked this in neatly right below the line. That's not an accident. And I think if anything, they're going to kind of maneuver around that. The Horner thing is interesting. The Horner conversation is fascinating. I think most people around the Cubs have been very like it. He's really good. And like, yes, it's probably going to be hard to extend him maybe. And I think what Matt Shaw showed you this past year was a player that is a major leaguer that is probably going to be good someday. You don't have to plan around him. And if you're the Cubs, you roll with your best team. And if Matt Shaw's on the bench, so be it. And if you want to trade him, fine. I don't know what a trade value is right now, but I think right now the team with Nico Horner, the outfield is a weird, it's a weird question, right? I guess you wonder if there is a move there, but still looks like a pretty good roster to me.
Yeah, I think that they could have entered the season with Matt Shaw playing every day and you would have been like, oh, I'm interested to see how that goes, right? But you're right. Yeah. What we saw was not a guy that you need to plan around. Simple as.
Yep.
Good. Like, he was like a 3-win player on BREF. Like, his defense was pretty good and he figured some things out as the season went on. Is he a franchise type? Probably not. You know what's funny is, wow, this is just hitting me. I remember I went and saw Matt Shaw play at Maryland when he was a junior in Florida during spring training, their first game of the year. And I sat with an evaluator and the evaluator said to me, he's very Bregman-y. He's kind of like Bregman light. And now I'm like,
Well there are some ways that he is not that. But he is a big leaguer and I do what they do with him. I just think it's more likely they hold on to him. And I think Nico is a really, really, really good player.
Nico Horner is playing every day for the Cubs in 2026. Like, I firmly believe that. I don't think they're going to trade him because if you're signing Bregman, you're signing Bregman for 26 and 27 and sort of 28, right? Why are you going to then take a step back by trading Horner?
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
It just doesn't make sense. And whereas, you know, Shaw, I do agree with you. Like, I do think they end up keeping him around because someone could get hurt. Like, guys get hurt all the time.
Someone could get hurt.
Alex Bregman could get hurt. Like, how many plate appearances does Matt Shaw get this year? Over under 430? I would probably take the over on that for the Cubs, right? Like, he...
Yeah. Depends just what you think of the rest of their bench. I think... We didn't talk about Kevin Alcantara after the...
And what you think about Ballesteros, right? Like, there are all these pieces that do kind of interchange. Like, is there a scenario where if Ballesteros doesn't hit, maybe they start him in AAA and Bregman sees a decent amount of time at DH where you're going to try and get him off his feet, right? And Shaw's playing third on those days where they're right? Like, I just see a scenario where it makes sense to keep Matt Shaw around because let's just put it this way, right? Let's say you do trade Matt Shaw. Okay? You put him on the block. Remember when you used to play like sports video games and you could like put players on the block?
Yeah,
like it was like an actual list of things. Yeah. What do they need? Right? What are you get back for Matt Shaw? And at this point, I think the answer to that question is like Mason Montgomery, right? Is like a young reliever. Like the Pirates are trading him. They just got him from Tampa, right? But like, a young reliever that's controllable, that's a difference maker in the bullpen. And I don't think they're going to trade Matt Shaw for a reliever, right? And so because of that, I think it just does make sense to hold on to him.
Sure. That said, it's an interesting position player group. I think they're just going to hold it and ride the good vibes all the way to Mesa in spring training in a month. And I was already planning on going to Cubs camp, but I can imagine this heightens the possibility that I will be spending multiple days over there near Sloan Park. So it's a huge deal. I think that, yes, there are parts about it where it's like, how's this going to age? Whatever. This is how the Cubs should be acting. It's very refreshing for them to step up and make something like this happen.
Dude.
And, good for
that's the whole thing.
So
With these teams, right, like the way that we think about teams and the way that they operate financially, right? We have the Dodgers and the Mets in their own category. And then we've had like the Phillies, Yankees, and Blue Jays now in that, in that second group.
Blue Jays are now closer to that first
Blue category, Jays are getting close to the first category, right? But the Cubs and the Red Sox and the Giants kind of have been linked in my mind where it's like these three teams are institutions, right? They are national brands. Maybe the Giants are a tick below the other two, but they are big freaking deals with big real estate holdings around their stadiums that print money because the organizations are good at the business side. And yet they have not taken that and invested it onto the field because in a way they don't need to. We'll talk about this in our next segment with the Red Sox. Because the fans are going to show up anyway. Wrigley is packed in the summer. Fenway's packed in the summer, whether they win 75 or 95 games. And it is so refreshing to see the Cubs act like a bully, right? To operate with urgency, to be irrational in your spending to a point, right? What's the quote? You got to be, if you're, I think Andy McCullough got this from Andrew Friedman. It's like, if you are smart on every free agent, you're going to end up third on every free agent.
Yep. Right? Well, that's here we are.
So good for Alex Bregman. Point relevant. Good for the Cubs. Like, it's very clear that Bregman wanted somewhere to be for a long time. The Cubs are offering him that. We'll talk about that in the no trade clause conversation in a second. Already have Bregman going to the Chicago Blackhawks game, right? Before the deal is even announced, which is awesome. This happening during the Bears game. I'm sure many of you don't watch football. The Chicago Bears have been bad for a long time. Their first playoff game in a long time. Down at halftime, Bregman deal gets reported like during the third quarter, and they come storming back to win in miraculous, heroic fashion. The sports vibes in Chicago right now must be absolutely through the roof. And so, like, the Cubs tweeting, like, what a great day for Chicago before confirming the deal. Yeah.
The Bulls suck, but they're fine. The last thing we have to talk about with this is, of course, the Scobo. It's time, folks, for another update of the offseason Scott Boras scoreboard. We have wondered, what is this contract going to look like, especially when you're in round two of free agency? Pete Alonso got that short-term deal opted out, got a nice chunk of change. We said, nicely done. Very nice. Okay, Alex Bregman, you did the same thing. Got that big three-year $120, $40 million, and say adios to the Red Sox. That's what they did. Remember, last year, the best offer he had a year ago was from the Tigers, reportedly $6,171. And now, with this contract, plus the $40 million he made last year, Alex Bregman, even with the deferrals, whatever, you want to put this number a little bit lower than it really is, essentially getting 6 years, $215 million. I mean, it's not that complicated. This is a nice piece of business for the Boras Corp. I don't know. Anything to add here? I mean, I do have one more thing.
Bow Rao, because he's got W's in his name. Nailed it.
That said, Jake, I would actually like go to ahead say, and I have one more thing. Yep.
Yeah. Here's the thing. This is a win for Scott Boras. Duh. Right. Like, this is more money than we thought he would get. The deferrals, we don't know what the deferrals bring the number down to yet. And like, maybe it's $10 and, you know, it's not.
I think we have a pretty good idea. It's closer to $30 million than $35 million a year, whatever.
I want to just say to Scott Boras, Scott, we know what you're doing. And this is all agents. We know what you're doing when you got a deferral deal and you let the news break at night and the number's 175 and everyone's like, oh my God, that's nuts. Are there deferrals? And you don't know until the next morning. And it's like, the number's the number, right? Like, if let's say the deferrals bring the value down to 150, right? Just say 150. If the number had been 5150, I don't think we would have been like, whoa. Whereas like 175 with deferrals, I'm still, my brain like is struggling to, you know, it's like, we have
all that said,
mom, can we have 150? No, we have 175 with deferrals at home.
All that said, we have to grade Scott Boras on another element here. And I don't know if you saw this. It was in one of our group texts, but I know you were traveling, so you maybe missed this. Obviously, the fact that this was going on during the Bears game was highly notable. And Bob Nightingale of USA Today did a little bit of reporting on this, which is to text Scott Boras. Play reporters in our industry can text Scott Boras, and Scott Boras will respond to them.
We're not there someday. We're not there.
Hashtag goals.
Pause. The goal, obviously, is to have Scott on to do the segment. He'd probably do it. If we got Scott on to do the segment, like, other agencies would be like, guys, come on. Like, what are you doing? And we'd be like, it's funny. Sorry. But we're not a text Scott Boras level. I think we could get there by the end of the year. 2026,
to be clear,
goals.
To be clear, other agencies are already doing that as it relates to our Scobo. Anyway, why do I bring this up? Because in this story from Bob, he quotes Scott Boras. Quote, big night for Chicago, Scott Boras, Bregman's agent said in a text to USA Today Sports. So while this is in Bob's story. So while the Bears were coming back from a 21-3 halftime deficit to win 31-27, Boras and the Cubs were actually in the middle of negotiations, question mark. Boras responds, quote, Bears game, question mark. I was packing the green in for Breggy with the Cubs. L.
Ooh. I don't know.
So Packers, this is a Packers joke on top of the Bears.
I know.
Packers,
and
Bears.
And Green Bay.
Packing the green in for Breggy with the Cubs.
Here's my take. If it wasn't Breggy, if it was just Bregman, like I was packing the green in, why do you think this is a loss? Like, it's true. Like, it's true. He packed the green in. It's at least a draw for me. Like, here's why I'll argue for a draw. One is this is kind of a new avenue for Scott Boras. Like,
this
jokes.
Is true. And it's like,
and opens up a can of worms.
He couldn't have. Yes. You know what? You're right. Because while I think it's a little clunky, this was like, this is evidence that like he can read and react. You know,
right.
At the start of the offseason, absolutely. In theory, they have all of November to write all of these other jokes, you know, let alone the whole year.
Right.
I mean, right? They know who's going to be.
We've known that Boris Korp's comedy chops are good. We haven't really known, can Scotty B move on his feet, right? Like, does Boras have improv ability? Can he, yes, and, right? Can he,
that's
yes,
true.
Can Scott Boras,
that's true.
Yes, and.
That's
and what
true.
We learned today. Now, maybe Nightingale texted him and said this, and then Scott, like, you know, called Christian Wig, who was like, I need help, right? Like, he's got Second City on the line or something.
Yeah.
He's got the hotline. Okay. But I, in
you know
my
what?
Opinion, I think this whole thing is a win. Like him doing a bit
point.
Via text plus the tech. Like, to me, it's a win. You know, I'm harsh on Scott. I don't think most of his jokes are good, frankly.
Okay. That's true. I guess if you adjust for spontaneity, it's closer to a win. So... yeah,
come on.
It's a compelling case.
Live a little.
It's a compelling case. All right, two wins for Scott on the day. Congratulations.
What does that bring him to?
I stand by. Like when I first read this, because again, every Boras pun joke, it gives you a visceral like either you're eye rolling, you're just like what, you're like confused as one. This one
there's
you're not
three.
Really that confused.
There's three.
You're just kind of like
reactions. Really, there's like what? There's like what does that mean? There's ugh. And then there's, whoa. Like, those are the three. And this one doesn't really fit into any of those three categories. And so that's why
I think that's why I was thrown. I think that's why I was thrown. All that said, we'll give him the win.
Two W's.
Give him the win. Give him the win. That brings Scott Boras on the offseason to 15, 4, and 10. 15 wins, 4 draws. And 10 losses. Clients,
let
we
me
are
pull
still
the table.
Waiting for. Yeah, pull up the table
and
then I'll
15
tell you
wins.
I'm still waiting for. Then we'll go to break.
You know who else has 15
4 and 10.
Wins and 4 draws? You know who else has 15 wins and 4 draws? Top of the table, Arsenal get in on 49 points.
Oh.
They only have 2 losses.
All right.
Same number of draws and wins.
Let's get
there you go.
Let's get Scott on Arsenal Fan TV. We are still waiting on Ranger Suarez. We're still waiting on Cody Bellinger, Zach Gallen, Nick Martinez, Rhys Hoskins, among others. Max Scherzer is still a free agent. All right, we're going to take a break. When we return, the Boston Red Sox.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Let's crap on the Red Sox. I mean, thoroughly... go through what this means for the Red Sox.
Oh, boy. Kind of late to the party. This has already been like 48 straight hours of this. So, you know, we're kind of coming in late here. But this really is a remarkable, remarkable outcome. And it was always possible. I think if we've learned anything in free agency over the years, like, just, you know, don't get too comfortable. Don't just be like, ah, he'll just go back. It's easy for people like us and fans to say like, ah, you know, Bregman, you know, Red Sox, yeah, they'll work it out. But this, as far as ones where when it doesn't happen, you're like, man, like, this is really something to behold. This one is way up there just because it's just so, there are so many things involved here. There are so many parts of this that you just think back for the over the last year. That's really less than a year, right? I mean, Bregman didn't sign until mid-February.
11 months.
What an 11 months for this franchise.
I called it
to the
in
list
my story,
of things Jordan Netflix doc missed this out was, on.
I said this was an unfortunate, embarrassing conclusion to a most tumultuous year.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's do the end first, actually. This
he's
is not... he's on the Cubs, not on the Red Sox. This is not how anybody associated with the Red Sox, be it fan, player, front office official, wanted this to end. That is a fact, right? This is not the optimal culmination. This, instead, in my opinion, is an embarrassment. Does it mean that the 2026 Red Sox are going to be bad? No. If they win the World Series, all will be healed. All will be well. But where we sit right now on January 13th, the Red Sox are worse than they were when the season ended, at least on paper. And the way that they got to this point is just a folly of errors, a cavalcade of goofiness. And I am frankly fortunate to have lived through this whole saga because as someone whose happiness is not contingent on the Red Sox winning games, this is so funny. Like, the whole thing is funny.
Yeah.
And that those are my broad thoughts. Whereas, like, you know, June Lee on Twitter is like, in each of his tweets, because he's from Boston and he cares about the franchise, there's like this tone of like indignant anger that like permeates the way he talks about it. For us, it's like more LOL coded, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just whatever, whether we're I just cannot believe that this is how this has gone. I mean, the other thing is, it's also important to remember how weird it was when it began, let alone how unbelievable this conclusion is, right? It was already a strange marriage from the beginning. Now, it because they got him, it was like, this is awesome. But everything from like the beginning of last offseason, when at the, you know, you have all offseason, you have Alex Cora being like, I love Alex Bregman. It would be really cool if he played second base. Hopefully we can get him. I think he could play second base. And then he just lingers. He signs. He shows up the first day of spring training. They're like, hell yeah, this is awesome. Second base, third base. They're like, he's going to play third base. And they're like, huh, well, that's interesting because there's that other guy that they have that they just gave a lot of money. Isn't he a third baseman? Oh, whatever. We'll figure that out. And then we got to play Christian Campbell at second base, you know? So Rafael Devers, he'll figure it out. He'll go to first. He'll go to DH, whatever. It was already from the beginning, right? And then just every, you know, it's hard to even remember every little step along the way. Tristan Casas blowing his leg out, and now we need a first baseman. And now John Henry smoking a cigar, right? Because they've got Alex Bregman on a deal that he was going to opt out of after 1 year, you know, like, what were you really celebrating there? The fact that it was still working, you trade Rafael Devers and that's a catastrophe, but then you do start winning more and the Giants start losing more and you're like, haha, see, I told you Rafael Devers is a loser, but you still got to bring Alex Bregman back because you have said all the nice things that you said about him, the decision to say this guy is the face of our new face of our franchise. This guy's our leader on and off the field. He's going to be what kind of helps guide this next group of, you know, young players into being a contender in the American League East. And instead he just leaves. And now you have Roman Anthony posting on Instagram, you know, like, bye, Alex. It's like, all right, well, so much for that.
So you spent Devers trade onward justifying that decision in part by celebrating the very real qualities of Alex Bregman, right? I think we both disagree with the decision to prioritize, or really the decision to feel like you needed to prioritize one over the other. Like they, Bregman and Devers could have worked together on the same field at the same time if you just put one at second or mix Devers into first or communicated better, whatever. But after you trade Devers, you then spend the rest of the year lifting Alex Bregman up, right? And then the winter comes and you just complimented Alex Bregman for four straight months. And he's like, okay, you like me, so pay me. Like, back all that up with the cash. And the Red Sox said, nah, no thanks.
And
I'm good. And I think that is, to me, like, what makes this so weird and hollow is, like, you just spent 4 months telling me how awesome, how generational, and how much of a game changer Alex Bregman is, and yet you clearly don't believe that enough to back it up with action.
Well, and let's bring Breslow into this as a character, because
Craig Breslow,
when
chief baseball officer of the Boston Red Sox, a little background on him. Craig Breslow is one of the few general managers, or top boys, top baseball lads, because right now they are all lads, that played in the Major Baseball League, right? Craig Breslow had a 15-year big league career.
12 years, 576 appearances as a major league reliever.
Right.
That's a lot of games.
Now, he also went to Yale. Went to Yale, so he's certified dweeb. I say that somewhat lovingly to, you know, my sister went there, so she's a nerd, and I love her. And yet, Craig Breslow, since taking the reins of the Boston Red Sox, has almost cosplayed a guy that didn't play. And that is what, to me, is the most bizarre. And we have heard this from Red Sox players, right, off the record. We have heard this from people dealing with Breslow. The fan base certainly feels it, that for whatever reason, he feels the need to, like, wear this Moneyball spreadsheet costume and talk in a certain way when justifying his moves. Because apparently he's not like that all the time, right? Like, people who know Breslow are like, yeah, he's awesome. And yet whenever he general manages and transacts, he just, like, code switches into a guy that quit playing baseball after Little League. It's just so bizarre to me.
I think in the specific case here, you mention the almost incongruent actions of team versus how they're being talked about. But again, when you were saying we talk about how awesome Alex Bregman is, who's talking about how awesome Alex Bregman is? You know, yeah, I'm sure Breslow was obviously saying some nice things along the way, but so many of these decisions, and as I alluded to earlier, what they viewed Alex Bregman as to begin with, clearly has just not been on the same page. And my only interpretation of all this is that some people didn't think Alex Bregman was as important as other people. That was probably true a year ago when they got him in the first place. You know, some of the reporting from a year ago suggests that it was not Craig Breslow leading the charge to make sure they got Alex Bregman. Obviously, as we know with cigar smoking John Henry, and whether there was other some reports that Theo Epstein was involved in being like, hey, you should sign this guy. Like,
maybe Theo was involved with the Cubs. Maybe.
Well, and I be so funny. I mean, I guess it's not that impossible. It sure makes sense. But anyway, the point is like people are not, they're not on the same page. And that honestly is reflected in the entire roster. You know, like look up and down how this roster is currently constructed. And there's just parts that just don't, it's not a functioning group. And so you have this weird outfield surplus and you have, you know, young players that you believe in and want to rely on, but also don't really believe in and want to rely on based on the fact that you did want to bring back Bregman, but maybe you're interested in Bichette or maybe interested in, none of this is working together. Yes, I understand that you inherited Masataka Yoshida. I get it, right? But there's just still all these different elements to how that Breslow has acted. And obviously, he's made enough moves now that some of them have been smash successes, right? We know the Garrett Crochet thing is a huge win, and you get credit for that. But when you just look at the position player group and how they've acted and operated around it, and of course, trading Devers, the ultimate just like decision to get out from under that contract that they signed, you know, maybe Breslow didn't sign it. There just do not seem to be on the same page, and you end up in a situation where you're not in a position to win a free agent bidding war for someone that in theory, or not in theory, your entire fan base and roster thought was very important.
It goes above Breslow. Like Breslow to me is such an easy target for criticism because of how he communicates. And I want to get to an interview he did with Chris Cotillo at Mass Live in a second, because I do think he is a poor communicator, but it is above him, right? It starts with John Henry and Fenway Sports Group and how much money they're willing to allocate to the roster and for what they're willing to allocate that money to, you know? Now, part of those recommendations that come from Craig Breslow, you know, committing the money to Garrett Crochet is awesome. Deciding to commit that money to Christian Campbell doesn't look great. And like, that could have gone, some of that could have gone to Alex Bregman, right? And so I do think there is blame deserved in multiple places. You see what I'm saying? Like, I think that putting all the blame on Breslow.
I don't think Campbell's relevant to Bregman. I think it's more, I just mean that, like, from the finance, for the finances side, that's still a huge part of it, especially when you are looking at a payroll that we mentioned that the Cubs signing Bregman brings them to the CBT. If they were going to sign Bregman, which clearly the Red Sox had some amount of interest in, they would have had to go well over, which we know historically is not something that they're super into.
When John Henry lit the cigar, right? For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there's like a picture of the owner smoking a cigar in celebration after they signed Bregman.
So I believe his wife posted, which is still like a, it's not like John Henry was like, go post this. You know, it's not like the Red Sox team photographer was in there and took this photo. Like, it, but still, it's a glimpse.
Still, he did it. He did it. Like he
did it and we saw it. That's not an accident.
We know it. What was going through his head in that moment, right? Like is the win, because he's treating getting Bregman on that deal like a win, which it was in some ways. But one of two things was going to have to happen. Either he was going to be underwhelming and you'd get to keep him and you'd look bad because you overpaid a guy, or he was going to bang and be awesome and go into free agency and you were going to have to pay his ass again. And so that's obviously what happened. And you decided not to pay him. You know what I mean? Like, it was treated like a win in the short term. And I guess if they win the World Series, then yeah, in 2025, like it's a win. But that's not what happened. And I'm not, for a team that keeps saying, oh, long-term vision, like we see the horizon, you know, we're clairvoyant. Like it's all about the long-term.
Well,
right? In theory, like that's how Breslow talks. He's talking about long-term viability and, you know, roster, all this BS that they keep saying, oh, it's about the future. Brother, you didn't see the future enough and now you don't have Rafael Devers or Alex Bregman. Like,
well, so let's talk about some of these answers that he gave to Chris Cotillo. Interestingly, in an email interview, which is not totally uncommon, but in this context particularly,
it's notable.
Is intriguing. Because this is like an acknowledgement. Remember, Alex Bregman hasn't even officially signed yet, right? But whatever. The point is, this is at least an acknowledgement. I need to say something. If correct. You're going to answer these email questions from Mass Live, right? You don't have to do that. But clearly he was compelled to do that. But he was also compelled to do it in this format and not, all right, we're going to do a Zoom or a phone call where I'm going to talk through it and like actually speak as a human as best I can. This is like, here are the questions. Here is how I am going to answer it with the exact words. I get to decide literally exactly, which is not what happens when we speak in the world. That's not what happens when we get on this podcast, Mike. Yeah, we prepare. I don't know exactly what I'm going to say because nothing we're doing is scripted. This is literally a scripted answer because that's the point. Even if he wrote it, it is a scripted answer.
Would Brian Cashman or Andrew Friedman, Yankees, Dodgers, would they handle this over email? No way. No way. Because they have enough confidence in themselves and the way that they've operated and the way they've built the roster and the things that they've accomplished. Like, that's obviously part of it. I was just thinking about Dave Dombrowski doing this over email and laughed. There's just most guys who are running teams would do this on a phone call, I think, right? And I think it just shows that he's not comfortable enough to do it that way. And that's concerning to me. Whereas like Chaim Bloom, for the mistakes he made in Boston, like he was going on podcasts there all the time. And he, like Chaim felt like he had to justify the decisions he was making, right? And to a point you do. But when he was doing that, he was taking the heat. Like he, right? Like Chaim was wearing it, dude. Wearing it.
You don't got to tell me about GMs that like to talk, all right? Jerry DePoto said a lot of words, and he doesn't always say the right words, and it's gotten him in a lot of trouble. But he likes to talk. Jerry DePoto's been extremely honest the whole time. Another one of the former GMs who played Major League Baseball.
Sure.
He said, I was a fan growing up. I wanted to know what my team was doing, so I'm going to tell you. Probably aren't going to like it all the time, but sometimes, because I'm a human being, I'm going to say things that I probably shouldn't have.
Right.
But, you know.
What anyway, also just fits into this overall dynamic. Let me just, one more point on this. It just fits into this overall dynamic of Breslow being a odd and suboptimal communicator, right?
Yes, sure.
And that is true both in terms of like how he communicates with the fan base, how he communicates with players, and how he communicates with, in this case, clearly like to a point, agents with negotiations.
Sure.
Where it is not ideal, right? And yep. Doing this over email plays into that. Even if he is none of the things we project him to be, and we're being unfair, choosing to do it in this way only reinforces those things we believe. And so, like, that's why I think this being over email is a notable thing. So there are a couple of highlights from this. Chris Cotillo cooked. Where do you want to start?
I mean, it's not like any of these answers are shocking. I mean, to me, it's right. He's asked explicitly, wow, you had Devers and Bregman. Now you have no Devers or Bregman 11 months later. Like, what do you think about that? Quote, rather than spend a lot of time.
How about that, huh? That's nuts.
Again, that's not exactly how Chris phrased the question, but.
I know. That's how I would have phrased it. Like, well.
Did you see this? Rafael Devers on the Giants? James Tibbs is on the Dodgers? Sorry. Rather than spend a ton of time on the particulars of these cases, what is most important is one, how we respond to improve our roster in the near term, and two, how I can learn from the experiences and allow that to inform how I approach the role moving forward. Neither outcome we face right now is ideal, but both will be evaluated over a longer time horizon. And honestly, this is the only thing I care about, because what it is an acknowledgement that this ain't great. This wasn't the plan. We thought we had Alex Bregman, and maybe we thought we were going to still have Rafael Devers, and we don't anymore. So because that in and of itself is like a rare thing to have a general manager tell you that, like,
especially in such a short window after the decision,
to say like, this ain't great.
And maybe that is refreshing to a point. Like, I wish more general managers and managers and players were so like, I was the best words in the English language are, I was wrong, I'm sorry. Like, that's a good thing. But just the, again, from Breslow, it doesn't read that way. Like, it doesn't.
Well, no, but it also doesn't matter because in some ways it's refreshing, but the situation is a situation. It doesn't make anyone feel better, right? Yes, it's an acknowledgement that maybe things have not gone as they expected. Everything else, it's whatever. I mean, I don't know if there's any other quote in here that stands out, but it's like once you decide you're going to speak on this, he was going to have to speak on it at some point. I don't know when. Here's another way to think about it, right? When was he going to get on a Zoom call with reporters again, right? Well, if they sign a free agent for the first time this entire offseason, which they have yet to do, if they make a serious acquisition, which at this point, I don't know if or when that's going to happen. And so that's probably part
spring
of why
training
he felt like he needed to get on and be like, I got to answer some questions right away, whether that was his idea or, you know, PR's idea or whatever. Because we don't know when we were going to hear from him again, because they need to do something for him to get on the, you know, whatever, if he's not going to pick up the phone. Yeah. So anyway, I don't know. Is there anything else from here? Because we've gone long enough. I mean, we could do five more podcasts about this, but you get the point.
My last thing here that just stood out to me is Cotillo asked, like, what did you sense was like the motivation behind Bregman's and his team's decision making, right? Or Cotillo asks, why do you feel as though your offer to Bregman fell short? Is there an organizational policy against no trade clauses? A reported sticking point. Why were the reported deferrals in this case part of the club strategy to get the deal done? Answer. Without getting into the specifics of the negotiation, Alex and his family earned the right to decide where they want to spend the next 5 years. While we hoped it would be here, we respect the right they've earned. That paragraph that I just read means nothing. Nothing. Right? Those are just words. This is jargon. This is empty fluff. Here's what's interesting to me. It would be foolish and unfair for me to guess what was most important in their decision-making. I'm going to read that again. As the chief baseball officer of the baseball team trying to sign the baseball player. Quote, it would be foolish and unfair for me to guess what was most important in their decision-making. I vehemently disagree with that concept. I think it is vital and essential for you to understand thoroughly what is motivating the decisions made by the player you're trying to sign, particularly a player who was under your employ for the previous 11 months. It is clear to me, you, and all of New England that Alex Bregman wanted stability. After two straight trips through free agency, he seemed to be done with it. We've seen this with tons of players who've done the opt-out. They don't want to have to worry about that anymore. They want to live at a place. They want to buy a house. They want to send their kids to a school, right? They want to be in a community. That is a real thing. Bregman clearly wanted that, a place he could spend the rest of his career. And the Red Sox refusal to grant the no-trade clause was clearly a sticking point for Bregman, because Bregman just watched the Red Sox trade away a face of the franchise player that didn't have a no trade clause, right? And so from his perspective, there's no reason to take the Red Sox assurances at face value. That, I think, is an important part of how this played out. Because Bregman was like, if I'm going to commit to you, you need to commit to me as a place, as a community, as an institution. And that the Cubs, a team that have received many of the same criticisms that we were levying at the Red Sox, right? For the Cubs to kind of swoop in and understand the dynamic where the Red Sox wouldn't is notable. For the fan base, it is infuriating. For us, it is fascinating and compelling. And I just can't wait to see where they go from here.
And yeah, where they go from here is its own conversation, but we will wait and see, because there is some time for those moves
Fort Myers
to happen.
They go to Fort Myers.
We're going to take a break, and when we return, Bo Bichette meets with the Philadelphia Phillies. We'll be right back.
Well,
Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. One of those big free agent bats has come off the board in Alex Bregman, but three remain. Bo Bichette, Kyle Tucker, Cody Bellinger. We are going to focus on this Tuesday morning about Bo Bichette, who reportedly yesterday met with the Philadelphia Phillies. Now, one important thing about the timing here, and maybe this via is Zoom. Speculation.
Whether it's Zoom or not, Skype, Teams, was it Teams?
Do we know for sure it was? I don't know if we know for sure it was. Whatever. Whether it was Zoom, they met them. You might wonder why are they only doing this now? and I don't totally know the answer to that, but I do know that Bo Bichette got married last week, and I would not be surprised if Bo Bichette was like, "Hey, can I go get married first, and then we can deal with free agency, and I'll do that in January." So maybe the Bichette stuff is really heating up in earnest now. Obviously, we know the Red Sox, in theory, view him as a backup plan. That said, why would you believe they're going to win a bidding war to get Bo Bichette? If what just happened with Bregman, okay, you could say he's 4 years younger. They're more compelled to get him, whatever. Let's talk about the Bichette and Philly connection. Because this is one that when the offseason started, when I was thinking about what do the Phillies do if they don't get Schwarber, I was like, this would be, yes, an outfielder. We could talk about that too with them. But I love the Bichette and Philly fit for some reasons that I can talk about. But as someone who's covered the Phillies a lot more than I have recently, I would love to hear your opinion on this, because all this reporting and like this connection really did not come out until the last week or so when you were on vacation. So what is your perception of this situation right now, and how does it kind of fit into the larger Phillies offseason? And then I'll talk about why I would love this fit.
I mean, Matt Gelb at The Athletic, who covers the Phillies, he's written about this. It is directly tied to JT Realmuto, right? So Realmuto has been with the Phillies for a long time. He is a free agent. The overwhelming assumption in the industry is that he was going to end up back in Philadelphia. But those two parties are currently at something of a standoff, where in my understanding generally is, right, like Realmuto wants 3 years. The Phillies are like, we don't want to give you 3 years, or we don't want to give you more money. And so then now that there's like an impasse, the Phillies are starting to think about how they could go ahead and use that money that they were going to give to Realmuto. And Bichette, still being on the board, his name came up, and they said, let's kick the tires on that. Now there's the obvious connection. Bichette was very close and is very close with Don Mattingly, who was the bench coach in Toronto, who is now the bench coach in Philadelphia. I think that is a notable relationship. And I think Bichette would give the Phillies lineup something that they have sorely lacked over the years, which is a high contact presence amongst all of the big swingers and missers that dot the offense. Now, how would he slot in from a positional perspective? The infield as it's currently set up is Bryce Harper, is Bryson Stott, Trey Turner, and Alec Bohm. Alec Bohm has one more year before he hits free agency. Bichette has never played third base. He seems to be willing to do it. If the Phillies acquire Bichette, Bohm feels like the obvious guy to move because of the way that Bohm's production is like allocated with RBIs and a high batting average. He has a higher ARB number than you'd expect. Like he's making, I think, 10 and a half. Yep. And so moving him somehow would make more sense than moving Stott. And I think they really value Stott's defense at second, and they value what Stott brings. And I think that Bohm would be the guy on the outside looking in. There is no scenario, in my opinion, where like either of those guys are going to be a bench player. That's just, if Bichette is on the team, someone else is moving, and it's probably Bohm. Now, who is interested in Bohm, who could use Alec Bohm? Let's get to that if they sign Bichette. But the interest here is real. Like, they met with him, and it seems like it went well. And it's a very interesting fit. Now, you really like it. You want to kind of highlight why?
Yeah, the one thing from the positional side that I just wanted to mention, this is just my perspective. I don't view Bo Bichette as a good fit at third base. He's never played there. Could he figure it out? Yes. I think he can be a pretty solid second baseman. Bryson Stott has played third base at multiple levels, including the majors. I think if you're giving Bo Bichette a boatload of money, and if it's the Phillies, I have to imagine that probably is going to be a longer term deal. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Bichette's going to, as a younger free agent, is going to settle for something shorter and, you know, a Bregman style deal like we just saw with him a year ago. That said, I would think that Bo Bichette would play second. And if they do trade Bohm, Stott would play third. That would be my guess again. And honestly, I think that would still be the best alignment rather than having Bo learn third with his new team. But that said, I just love this fit because, I mean, you did mention it. The style of hitter that he is like exactly what the teams been missing, particularly in the postseason. And we marveled at Bo even as he missed the first part of the postseason, but at the very, even in the World Series, on one leg, this dude hits the best pitching in the world. This dude freaking rakes no matter the circumstances. This is the kind of hitter that they have been missing. And they have great hitters, obviously, right? Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber,
and Trey Turner. Like, I want to be fair. Like, yeah. Bryce is this kind of in October. Like,
kind of guy. For sure. But let's get more of them. If you're going to be the Phillies and you're John Middleton and you aren't, at least publicly, have not been concerned about, you know, how much you're spending, you're saying it's about legacy. It's about being remembered for the championships you win.
Live forever,
honestly,
baby.
To me, that says, then go sign Bo Bichette and bring back Real Muto. Like, just do it. Like, we know that this window is going to be finite. I think Bichette does appeal to them, too, because he is younger. We know that this is one of the older teams in the league. They are trying to get younger this year internally in the outfield in particular with the Justin Crawford. I just like it. And I also think if we're going to go really do irresponsible, you know, psychoanalysis of Bo Bichette, I think that this is the kind of fit on a roster, forget the actual roster, the team and this situation and the environment that is way better of an opportunity for him. If he is going to leave Toronto, where I believe that he would love to go back if the numbers aligned, than going to Boston and being a de facto Bregman replacement when, like, that ain't Bo. Bo is a great teammate. Bo is a great hitter. Bo is not the Alex Bregman persona. And that's fine. We don't need everybody to be that. Whether he would like it or not, if he goes to the Red Sox, that would be part of the conversation.
Absolutely.
And if he goes to the Phillies, he's like the fourth or fifth guy that you're even, you know, as like a headlining feature. And I'm sure Trey Turner has appreciated this, signing a gigantic contract with the Phillies and still kind of being, Trey Turner, a main character, obviously, and that's a huge contract. And we know that the Trey Turner has had some ups and downs in Philly. But I just think it's a way better fit for him from a personality standpoint to go to the Phillies if he is going to leave the Blue Jays. So I just like that a lot more. So we'll see. They still are going to have to pay him a lot of money because that's how this works. But I do like it. And we will see, because Boston sure could use him, but I don't know. I just, there's a lot of reasons why I'm skeptical that that would end up happening. And other than that, Dodgers are a great fit for him too, but that doesn't seem like the kind of situation that Bo Bichette would opt into, no matter what the numbers are.
Yeah.
So could be
I'm
wrong.
Fascinated
we will see
by him.
But I think I'm a huge Bo, fan. So yeah.
Yeah. We love Bo. Like, you said you don't want to do a psychoanalysis of Bo Bichette. I would, if I'm talking like players I want a psychoanalysis report on, like, Bo Bichette is top five.
Right.
Like, he is a fascinating cat, super smart, very intelligent guy, quiet. Yeah. And I think, like, when he steps on the field and he's playing, he has no problem being like that guy, being the guy. I think that part of what he has liked about Toronto is that Vladdy's there. Right. Like, he's not shouldering that on his own. And I think that that is an important part of how he prefers to move. All right. Enough that the Bichette Philly stuff. Anything else you want to do before we get out of here?
Well, again, Tucker Bellinger, we'll see. Seems like we're making progress, folks. Seems like we're going to have some more news, whether that's before Friday, whether that's next week. We will see what happens. There were a couple other signings. Maybe we'll get some later this week. We just got some news while we were recording, and we do have to talk about this. And that is that Team USA has added Ernie Clement for the World Baseball Classic. This comes a day after they announced that they added Byron Buxton to the roster, which is also fantastic, well-deserved. And you say, oh, what about PCA? Guess what? Byron Buxton is better than PCA, and Byron Buxton can hit left-handed pitching. And I have to imagine if Beaker Armstrong is not going to be facing many left-handers at this tournament.
and
yeah, whatever.
As much as we love Pete Crow Armstrong,
yeah.
As much as we love PCA, I would maybe say like, hey, PCA, like spring training wouldn't be like the worst thing for him, right? Like a real spring training, also.
Well, but PCA's on the roster. I mean, he's going to be on the team, so it's not like he's not.
You're right.
Be there.
I forgot about
I'm just
that.
Saying. Sorry.
No, totally forgot about
he's
that.
He's already on the team. I'm just saying.
Totally forgot about
you
that.
Know, we're talking about matchups and lineups. Like, you have if you're Team USA and you have the best players in the world at your disposal, go get them. Byron Buxton clearly wants to have that opportunity. I love that for him. But Ernie Clement is more along the lines of what you talked about when we were talking about, you know, more so about talking about the Dominican team, which is that for a tournament like this, for a lot of reasons, you probably don't want a team that is entirely all-stars. You are going to want to have some guys that can bounce around, that are willing to bounce around, that are willing to maybe be on the bench and get zero at-bats, right? And could you possibly pick a better player than this? Now, this is funny because Ernie Clement just had 30 hits in the postseason. So it's not like he's, you know, this is not Austin Hedges as the backup catcher, right? This is a player who is good and useful. That said, how many at-bats is Ernie getting in the WBC? I mean, like, what would you set the over-under at for at-bats?
I think he gets a start. I mean, he gets a start
against, like, Great Britain or something or... Yeah. So,
because, okay,
way,
so the other thing about Ernie, right, is that he makes a lot of contact. Like, something that happens in the WBC is guys are trying to go yard. Guys are trying to hit the ball over the fence, like, more than in the regular season. Like, they're just like,
hey, I would too.
Screw it. Like, I would too. Ernie is not trying to do that. Right. And so, like, he is a great ad. You need someone to carry the groceries. Right. You need a guy to sit on the bench and be in a good mood. Like, that's a real thing, dude. And there's not a better pick than Ernie. Imagine a year ago saying Ernie Clement's going to be on the Team USA roster and we're going to be fired up about it.
Maybe. Awesome. And also, maybe I'm underselling him. Like, maybe he is starting at second against the lefty instead of Terang. You know, maybe he is like a platoon guy with Terang. Like, that's not crazy. We'll see how the rest of the infield shakes out, but I just love this for him. Obviously, he's one of our favorite people and players, and also like a huge part of this conversation about the Blue Jays, truly, and Bo Bichette, you know, like he's really, really important to what they have going on. So I just
and the Bills won for him
and the Bills won so good. Ernie's having a good time. Congratulations to him. All right, we're done. We will maybe talk about Jake McCarthy, another UVA legend, later this week. Congratulations to the Rockies for learning how to trade. Jake Mintz, welcome back. So good to have you. Thanks for doing this with me. Thank you to Andrew Hartz, Ingrid Rosas for producing. As
I was always coming
back.
I was always going to come back.
We will be back on Friday. But we have another signing to talk about. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.